take the mic and just a quick happy birthday to Nancy before she leaves and goes out to celebrate. So yeah, I'm here for I Am That. And I feel like announcing I'm in a new message, because that last message I was in for, it seemed like 2 months. So it's kind of exciting to be turning the page and beginning a new message. The message is number 17 in the book, I Am That. And if you have the same paperback version I have, it's on page 49. And the question takes up like two-thirds of the page. So it's a very, very long question. So I'll read that. This is the questioner. The highest powers of the mind are understanding, intelligence, and insight. Man has three bodies, the physical, the mental, and the causal. The physical reflects his being, the mental, his knowing, the causal, his joyous creativity. Of course, these are all forms in consciousness, but they appear to be separate with qualities of their own. Intelligence is the reflection in the mind of the power to know. It is what makes the mind knowledgeable. The brighter intelligence, the wider, deeper, and truer knowledge. To know things, to know people, and to know oneself are all functions of intelligence. The last is the most important and contains the former too. Misunderstanding oneself and the world leads to false ideas and desires, which again lead to bondage. Right understanding of oneself is necessary for freedom from the bondage of illusion. I understand all this in theory, but when it comes to practice, I find that I fail hopelessly in my responses to situations and people. And by my inappropriate reactions, I merely add to my bondage. Life is too quick for my dull and slow mind. I do understand, but too late, when the old mistakes have been already repeated. So I was wondering where this questioner was going with all of this. And it appears that the questioner is really expressing, I have all of the intellectual knowledge from the studies. You know, I understand them. I really do. I get it. But man, if somebody steps on my toe, I scream at them. You know, I mean, I just, in practice, I'm just not where I want to be. So it's kind of interesting that Nisargadatta responds by saying, what then is your problem? Because I think I hear, you know, I guess we'll find out, but I think I hear what this person is saying is that, I'm not coming from peace in the world. You know, I'm coming from anger in the world. I'm coming from fear in the world. And even though I understand all of the teachings, I have absolutely no idea how to fix this, right? How to stop yelling at the bank teller when she's too slow, right? I don't know how to fix this. And again, Nisargadatta says, what then is your problem? So maybe Nisargadatta just wants the person to state it more clearly. But then the questioner continues, I need a response to life, not only intelligent, but also very quick. It cannot be quick unless it is perfectly spontaneous. How can I achieve such spontaneity? Nisargadatta says, the mirror can do nothing to attract the sun. It can only keep bright. As soon as the mind is ready, the sun shines in it. So what that makes me wonder, and we'll find out as we continue the conversation, but it makes me wonder if Nisargadatta is telling this person, you know, you're just not ready. You know, you're just not ready. If you were ready, for practical understanding, meaning that you live from it, that would begin to happen. And it's not happening because you're not ready. But we'll see. But it's almost sounds like what Nisargadatta is saying. Again, it says the mirror can do nothing to attract the sun. It can only keep bright. As soon as the mind is ready, the sun shines in it. The questioner says, is the light of the true self or of the mind? Nisargadatta says, both. It is uncaused and unvarying by itself and colored by the mind as it moves and change. It is very much like a cinema. The light is not in the film, but the film colors the light and makes it appear to move by intercepting it. So I think I'm a little bit challenged by this conversation so far, and I think what I'll do is I'll just read a little further and see if some clarity comes to me. Right now, I guess this is what I feel. If someone came to me and expressed all of this intellectual knowledge, but then also expressed that they don't have the ability to come from peace, that you know they come from anger in the world, I don't think I would respond with teachings that still sounded quite intellectual. I think I would probably start teaching the person some very basic practices that they could use in their daily life. You know, things like rest, accept, and trust, root cause inquiry, self inquiry, you know, using meditation for the purpose of purification. And that's not happening here. And so I'm a little bit flabbergasted, I think, because I'm not quite sure how this additional intellectual discussion is helping this person. However, I trust Nisargadatta. So what I'm going to do is keep reading and see if I can get some clarity. So the questioner then asks, are you now in the perfect state? And Nisargadatta says, perfection is a state of the mind when it is pure. I am beyond the mind, whatever its state, pure or impure. Awareness is my nature. Ultimately, I am beyond being and non-being. Which is a fair answer to the question. Even if you practice awareness, watching awareness at all, you can probably sometimes see, if not all the time, you can see the mind. The mind might be chattering a lot one day when you're in meditation, and other days the mind might be very, very peaceful. But regardless of whether the mind is chattering a lot or whether the mind is very, very peaceful, you're aware of that mind, right? Which means you're beyond the mind. You're aware of whether the mind is having a chattering day during your meditation or whether the mind is having a peaceful day during your meditation. So it's not just Nisargadatta. You know, Nisargadatta says, I am beyond being and non-being, right? I am beyond the mind, whether it's pure or impure. That's not just true of Nisargadatta. That's true of all of us, right? The awareness that we are is beyond the mind. And again, the best time to see that is during awareness, watching awareness meditation. So this is a very fair answer to the question, are you now in the perfect state? And Nisargadatta says that a state is a state of mind, and I'm beyond the mind. But the questioner, again, is still looking for how do I get, right? I mean, how do I get from here to there? And in fact, the next question that the questioner asks is, will meditation help me to reach your state? Nisargadatta says, meditation will help you to find your bonds, loosen them, untie them and cast off your moorings. When you are no longer attached to anything, you have done your share. The rest will be done for you. So I can't remember at this point all of the phases that I've gone through in meditation thus far, but I can remember a few of them. And what's really interesting about these phases that I've gone through is that I'm not going through any of them anymore. For example, there was a time when every time I closed my eyes to go into loving consciousness or awareness, so watching awareness meditation, and I think this was during year one, gentle healing, I would start finding thoughts about how to teach such and such in gentle healing, you know, how to teach this or how to teach that. And so what I did when I would see those thoughts is I would start practicing self-inquiry on those thoughts to become very, very aware that the mind thought that it was the teacher, and to become very, very aware that I was the one that was aware of the mind. Therefore, I am not the teacher. And as I practice self-inquiry on all of these, I call them teacher thoughts, at some point those teacher thoughts died. And once those teacher thoughts died, I didn't have the challenge of closing my eyes and seeing all these thoughts. I don't see thoughts at all anymore. I haven't in many, many months about teaching. There was another time in meditation where when I would just start to get deep in meditation, it's like these movies would start playing in my mind of these beautiful places that I've been. That I haven't been to in a long time. And they kind of like live in my heart somewhere. And these movies were very real. This is so amazing. I wish I could take you guys into my meditation and let you see what they were like. They were so real. And like I could walk around a corner, just, you know, of course, just in my mind, but I could walk around the corner and see what was around the corner. And each of these places felt so good to be there again, you know, because I hadn't been there in so long and it felt so good. And then I started noticing this was a distraction. This was keeping me away from awareness, watching awareness. And so when these places would start to show up, I would start asking, you know, who is it that sees this, or what is it that sees this? And even in the beginning, I would have to say I reluctantly, because these places were all places that I love, I would reluctantly turn my attention away from whatever place was being presented and turn my attention back to awareness, and they would vanish. And after a time, they vanished more easily. And then after a time, they quit showing up completely. So what Nisargadatta is really saying here is this is one of the purposes of meditation, right? One of the purposes of meditation is for these things to show up, you know, this attachment to the idea that I'm the teacher, this attachment to places, you know, for these things to show up so that, he calls them, so that they can be loosened, untied, and cast off. Is the way he words it, loosened, untied, and cast off, which means in meditation, there is some direct confronting of what appears in meditation, right? Direct confronting of what appears in meditation. And for me, that happens through self-inquiry. Self-inquiry is my primary way of confronting anything that shows up in meditation in order to cast it off, right? In order to cast it off and turn the attention back to awareness. So again, Nisargadatta says, so when the questioner says, well, meditation helped me to reach your state, Nisargadatta says, meditation will help you to find your bonds, loosen them, untie them, and cast off your moorings. When you are no longer attached to anything, you have done your share. And I would assume that this is when, you know, this is when quietness is really the meditation experience. When there's no more of these impressions or no more of these bonds or no more of these attachments showing up. So it's really important for us to notice, at least in my humble opinion, and I think in Nisargadatta's humble opinion, it's important for us to notice the patterns and the thinking that's showing up. For example, when the teacher thoughts were showing up, if I was to see it just as thinking, and not really question the idea, I am the teacher, I'm not sure those thoughts would have been cast off. You know, I kind of needed to notice the pattern that was happening there. I needed to notice what was capturing my attention. For some people, it might be parental thoughts. For some people, it might be financial thoughts. For some people, it might be, oh, I know another phase I went through. I went through a phase of, what do people think of me? I could just see that, you know, it'd be different stories, of course, that would show up during meditation that were distracting me. But if I was to look at what is the common element of these thoughts, the common element of those thoughts were, what do people think of me? Right. And so what I needed to do is, again, I practice inquiry. That's how I confront the thoughts. I practice inquiry. You know, what is it that sees this thought? And that allows me to have the space from the thought. I notice the thought is an object. I'm the awareness that sees it. And as I confront the thoughts and I practice inquiry on the thoughts, I do not tolerate the thoughts is another way of putting that. Eventually, those thoughts died, where I don't really have concern about what other people think of me, you know? So, and of course, in Miracles, it says something about how it's not our job to search for love, but it's our job to search for the obstacles to love's presence, right? In a way, Nisargadatta is telling this man, he's asking, will meditation help me to reach your state, right? In other words, will meditation help me to reach that awareness that I am beyond the mind, that awareness of my true self? And Nisargadatta is saying, meditation will help you to find your bonds, you know, your attachments, your obstacles, right? Meditation will help you to find your bonds, because when you sit down and try to be quiet, they're going to show up, right? That's what's going to happen. But they're going to show up. So meditation will help you to find your bonds, loosen them, untie them, and cast off your moorings. When you are no longer attached to anything, you have done your share. The rest will be done for you. And when he says the rest will be done for you, the questioner asks, by whom? And Nisargadatta says, by the same power that brought you so far, that prompted your heart to desire truth and your mind to seek it. It is the same power that keeps you alive. You may call it life or the supreme. And, you know, this to me is a very, very important teaching, which I don't know if a lot of people consider it deeply. But, you know, somewhere, somehow that desire arose in me to find, I don't know if I even called it truth back then. Briefly, I've probably told you guys this story before, but briefly, what seemed to happen for me was I read Peace Pilgrim, and I could see that Peace Pilgrim knew something I didn't know, and she knew it to be like the one fact, you know, the one fact of everything. She called it love, and so I probably called it love, but I knew it wasn't what I thought of as love, like, oh, I love my daughter. Oh, I love my boyfriend. It wasn't that. I knew it was something else that she was talking about. And so what I really set out to do was I set out to discover what she knew. I wanted to know it. But where did that come from? Where did that come from, that desire to change my whole life? Because in effect, that's what I did. In order to find this thing that I didn't know, that she knew. Why was that so important to me? And the answer is that is consciousnesses, desire to awaken, arising in this body, personality, mind. it doesn't really come from me if you use the word me to mean this body, personality, mind. It comes from consciousness. It comes from something that's far beyond me, right? And so what Nisargadatta is saying here is that which caused you to be interested in this in the first place is going to bring you all the way. You know, it wouldn't have started this process in you if it wasn't going to complete this process in you. It has an intention, and it is much more than you are. And certainly there's going to be some participation on your part. But you can trust that this, which started you on this path, knows how to finish this path. Right? And that, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I think that's really comforting. So again, when he says that, you know, you go into meditation, you find your bonds, loosen them, untie them, cast them off, right? He says the rest will be done for you by the same power that brought you so far, that prompted your heart to desire truth and your mind to seek it. It is the same power that keeps you alive. You may call it life or the supreme. Now, the questioner says, the same power kills me in due course. And of course, you know, there's an apparent truth to that. I mean, there's an apparent truth to that. Everybody dies. You know, everybody dies. But the misunderstanding in that is the thought that I am this body, mind, personality. I'm not the body, mind, personality. I'm the consciousness. You could call it the life force that makes this body personality appear to live for a time. But when the life force lays down this body personality, the life force keeps right on going, and I'm the life force. So it's not really true that this consciousness kills me, that I am the consciousness. Consciousness and the life force are the same thing. It never kills me. It just stops playing with this particular doll, right? But it's not true that it kills me. That's a misunderstanding of what I am. But again, the questioner says, this same power kills me in due course. Nisargadatta says, were you not present at your birth? Will you not be present at your death? Find him who is always present, and your problem of spontaneous and perfect response will be solved. So now I'm feeling a little satisfied because Nisargadatta is getting around to answering what I feel was the original question. The problem that this person has is believing that he's the person, you know? So if he gets frustrated, for example, by slow bank tellers, you know, there are thoughts in his mind about, you know, maybe how busy he is, how stupid they are, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and he thinks those are his thoughts and he believes those thoughts. And that's why when finally it's his turn to get to the bank teller, he starts screaming at the bank teller. If he was aware of himself as consciousness, he wouldn't have to look for peace because he would also be aware of himself as peace. And he would be able to stand there as peace, watch whatever is going on in the bank or any other environment. And then just when it was his turn, just step up to the bank teller and state his business. So the problem, the reason that he reacts from, it sounds like anger from the way he described it. The reason that he reacts from anger is because he doesn't know who he is. Right? That's the real problem. And so now Nisargadatta is pointing out that if he would discover himself as consciousness, discover himself as that which is constant, all these other problems would disappear once he starts abiding as himself. And in fact, that kind of reminds me of our thought of awakening for the day. Let me see if I still have that here on my phone. I did earlier before I went over to Danielle's, but then I was messing around. Yeah, then I messed around looking up Las Cruces and I lost it. So let me just go to the Awakening Together website real quick and I'll bring it back up. Okay, so listen to this prayer. My prayer today is for the state of constantness as a state that I hold in my awareness always. As the ego struggles for experience, meaning the ego, you know, talking about how slow the bank teller is or whatever, as the ego struggles for experience, let me stay in constantness, right? Which is awareness, which is observer. Let me watch the ego's efforts from awareness of constantness and peace. Let me not interact with the ego by believing it or joining it or trying to stop its workings. Let me remain in constantness and know where I am. Amen. So that's really the advice now that Nisargadatta is giving to this particular, I say man, but it could be a woman. So the next question is, realization of the eternal and an effortless and adequate response to the ever-changing temporary event are two different and separate questions. You seem to roll them into one. What makes you do so? Oh, that's funny because I don't actually agree with him. What he's saying in the question is realizing the eternal is one thing. And then being able to be at peace in the world and respond appropriately is another thing. How come you're rolling them into one? And I think he's just completely mistaken about that. I think that what causes you to be peaceful is knowing yourself as awareness, as the watcher, as peace, right? It's living from that detached state of mind. I don't think that you can be involved in thoughts and involved in the attachments of thoughts and be peaceful too. If you're involved in thought, you're going to respond in the way thought tells you to, right? Just like Revolver, which we're watching this month. When Jake Green's involved in thought, he's afraid of elevators. It's only when he's able to be the observer, to separate himself from thought, to see thought as not him, that he's able to be at peace in an elevator. So I think knowing who you are and being able to respond in the world are definitely the same thing. And Nisargadatta has an answer for him that I think I'm just going to have to wait on because I think I'm out of time. So there's only a little bit left on this particular page, but there's not enough that I could go over in 1 minute, not even this answer. So what I'm going to do next week is start over with this question about how realization of the eternal and an effortless and adequate response are two different things. We'll start right there, and then we'll move forward and finish this message and possibly even start a new message. So, Don, just give me about a minute. I'll think about what the title should be, and I'll type it in the room. Thank you.